Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Cam, if you did want to, if you wanted to race me after we have our three-point shootout, I'm what, more than twice your age? But I don't think you can beat me. I don't think you're in that kind of shape, the way I'm in that kind of shape.
Here we go.
This is the Skip Bayless Show, episode 106. This, as always, is the undisputed everything I cannot share with you during the 2.5 hour debate show that is undisputed. Today, in episode 106, I will respond to Cam Newton's response. And I will respond to an onslaught of your probing, provocative questions, this time about Jerry, about Dak, about who's the GOAT of actors. Can't wait for that. And who is now the best coach in pro football post Belichick. And I'll end with two very personal questions about losing my keys, if not my mind. And how many glasses of water do I have on my nightstand? I will explain. I will answer. But first up, as always, it is not to be skipped. Okay, so last week, as you might remember, I responded to the shot that Cam Newton took at me over my analysis of Anthony Edwards' chase down block. Cam said on his podcast, if I can't hit my head on the rim, my head on the red, as Cam said, like that, clever, then I should just shut up. So I turned that around on Cam and I said, I seriously doubt you could hit your head on the rim. So does that mean, Cam, that you should be disqualified from critiquing Ant-Man's block also? Well, I think not, but I'm using your logic on you. Seriously, at even, what are you, 6'5"? I don't think you could hit your head on the rim. I'd love to watch you try. Maybe you'd prove me wrong. Then I said, on this podcast, in response to Cam's podcast, that, heck, I doubt that Cam could beat me in a three-point shooting horse contest. And using Cam's illogical logic, at least to me, I said, if I win, then he should never be able to comment on an NBA player's shooting again. Cam soon responded, challenge accepted. Now, if you are, as I speak, watching the video link to this show, you can see me getting ready for Cam this past Monday at a little gym that I frequent just right down the street from the Fox studios in which I sit right here, right now, as I speak to you. This little gym is an old school lab, quote unquote, where I occasionally go by myself just to shoot, just for a little escape, maybe a little therapy. I just love to shoot a basketball. My favorite sound in sports, especially in an empty gym, is the sound of a swish. I just love to hear the nets pop. Okay, so I'm a feet on the floor set shooter. Always have been, always will be. So is Manu, so is Magic. So is Halliburton, for that matter. That's a funky shot, but does it ever go in from distance? So I go to my little old school lab just to get away occasionally. I end up making up games to play against myself, just the way I did throughout my childhood when I often got left at my grandmother's house. I was the oldest of three kids. You had no choice but just to try to amuse yourself in the backyard, making up games. So in my little gym, I'll sometimes see how many straight free throws I can make, rebounding my own. There's nobody there but me, which is hard because you lose your position, your stance, your rhythm, your feel if you have to go rebound the basketball and go back and start over. But I see how many in a row I can make. I think my record's 25 over the last 8 years in my little old school lab. I did invent another game. It's sort of an around the world type of game. I always finish my shooting session with this game, maybe try it three or four times until I'm worn out. But in my little invention of a game, you have to make all five threes, corner, wing, top of circle, far wing, far corner, against the clock. And obviously, I'm by myself. I have to rebound my misses. So if you start off, starting your stopwatch, with that first corner three, and it bounces long, you're sunk against the clock because you're going to have to run it down and run it all the way back to the corner and start over while the clock is ticking. And then it's very tricky as you run from spot to spot to reset your feet and regain your balance in time to make a good stroke to try to make the three against the clock. It's a good game. You ought to try it sometime. My record is 48 seconds to make all five against the clock. And by the way, I occasionally play one-on-one if I can get somebody to go with me. But I've worn out most of my friends playing one-on-one the way I want to play it in my little old-school lab of a gym. I like to run. So we play to 21 by threes and twos. And if I get the rebound, I am running to the three-point line as fast as I can dribble it, and I'm wheeling and I am launching, and then I am following my shot. And if you don't box me out and I miss, I'm going to get the rebound, and I'm going to run to the far corner, and I'm going to wheel, and I'm going to shoot. And I'll probably make that one, threes versus twos. And I can wear you out and run you down, going to 21 points. I like to play three games without much rest. Always against the clock, off the court. Always got somewhere to be, some debate to prepare for Undisputed. So that's what I do at my little old school lab of a gym. Love hearing the bounce of the ball echoing through my little lab. And by the way, speaking of running, Cam, if you did want to, if you wanted to race me after we have our three-point shootout, you could name the distance. I don't care. Mile, 2, 3 miles, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 miles. I don't care. You name the distance. We'll race. I'm what? More than twice your age. But I don't think you can beat me. I don't think you're in that kind of shape the way I'm in that kind of shape. But I would gladly participate in that if you're into it. So, Cam, you also brought up how you are so angered by people saying that athletes, ex-athletes, shouldn't have podcasts. As someone once said of LeBron, just shut up and dribble. Remember that? Well, you didn't hear that from me, and you won't. I think, Cam, that you have a whole lot to say that should be said by you on your podcast. As I said last week, I believe you could have a great future in television as a commentator if you so chose, which is why a couple of years back, I tried to get you to come out here to LA for a week or whatever you wanted to stay for and to do Undisputed. See if you liked it, it liked you. I think it would if you liked it. You have a whole lot to say and a reason to say it. So I cherish every word that you speak in public. Not once have I criticized a single thing you've said on your podcast. Not once. No, just for the record, you took a shot at me. And I will admit that there is one criticism from athletes, ex-athletes, that angers me more than I can express to you, Cam. That criticism is, you don't know because you didn't play. You know, I first got blindsided with that concept. It's a long time ago. It's my first year in Dallas as the lead columnist at the Dallas Morning News. It was 1979. I was doing a live radio show before a studio audience. I believe the host was the late, great Frank Gleiber, who became a good friend of mine. You might know him from CBS days doing golf, Masters. I think it was Frank Gleiber moderating between me and Charlie Waters. You longtime Cowboy fans will remember Charlie Waters. He made 3 straight Pro Bowls through those years. Safety. 3rd-round pick out of Clemson. And we're going back and forth. I knew Charlie fairly well. I liked him. I thought he liked me. And all of a sudden, he blindsided me with, "Do you even play high school sports?" Well, yeah, I sort of stammered and stuttered, not ready for the question. I did make all region my senior year in high school. In baseball, I was pretty good in baseball. It didn't come off very well, but as I drove home from that show that night, it hit me right between the eyes what I should have said. I should have said, "Wait a second, Charlie. The guy who picked you in the draft to play for the Dallas Cowboys in the 3rd round out of Clemson was Gil Brandt, who never played even high school football, never played high school football. Gil Brandt, in the 70s, he became known as the draft master, running drafts for Tom Landry and Tex Schramm and the Dallas Cowboys. The truth was Gil Brandt made Tom Landry with great draft picks, and then through the 80s, he broke Tom Landry with shockingly poor swings and misses and reaches at the top of the drafts. Never played high school football. In camp, this reminds me, you were drafted in Carolina by a GM by the name of Marty Herney. Marty Herney. Cam, I think you know this, or maybe you don't, but Marty Herney came up as a sports writer. He was a sports writer before he got into actually scouting and picking pro football players. A sports writer, just like me. Who knew? What do I always say? The greater the player was, often the less feel he has for who can play the game that he played at the highest level and why others can or cannot play the game he played at the highest level. See it all the time. See Michael Jeffrey Jordan, greatest athlete who ever played any sport, greatest performer, greatest competitor, greatest, 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 goat, goat, goat. Michael Jordan in Charlotte became the single worst GM, player picker, program builder in the history of the NBA. The single worst. So the single greatest player became the single worst team builder. Huh, why is that? Maybe because he was so great that he wasn't sure why he was so great. Not that he didn't work hard. What did I call Michael Jordan in my days as the lead columnist of the Chicago Tribune? A supremely talented, supremely talented overachiever. I'll say it again, a supremely talented overachiever. Nobody worked harder than Mike did, and nobody was more gifted than Mike. That's a lethal combination for everybody who tried to compete against the greatest competitor ever. But sometimes you're so great that you can't see why others aren't. And again, Cam, if you ever want to come out here, debate me about football, sit on live TV on Undisputed and debate me about football, you are welcome any day. You name it. And, yeah, I am ready for our three-point horse contest. I often practice from NBA range, so you can name the rules. My little old-school lab of a gym is the college three-point line, as you can probably see in the video. But I often launch from 2 or 3 feet farther out just so I can try to stay in NBA range shape. But you call that. And Cam, you'll probably beat me. I mean, you're only 34. You're a former NFL MVP. You could still start at quarterback for a number of NFL teams. I think you and I both know that. I didn't even play high school football. It's funny, but in seventh grade, I was the quarterback for a team of mostly eighth graders. We had a really good team. We dominated our league, went undefeated in our league. I don't know how many games we played, probably maybe eight. Wound up in the city championship game that was in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Played on a Saturday night, freezing cold. Wind chill had to be below zero, probably around the 1st of December at Old Northeast Stadium, Oklahoma City. We played a team called the Southside Bears. We lost 44-0 to a team quarterbacked by Daryl Porter. You can look him up. He went on to become a World Series MVP and an all-star catcher for both the Royals and the Cardinals. Daryl Porter was the other quarterback. And my claim to fame in that game was I intercepted Daryl Porter's two-point conversion attempt pass that stopped the Southside Bears from winning that game 46-0. Final score was 44-0. I had no chance against their pass rush or their secondary. So as I went into eighth grade, I quit football or forgot about football to focus on baseball and basketball. And I was voted in eighth grade the athlete of the year at the largest junior high school in the state of Oklahoma, Taft Junior High School. Probably had about 1,500 kids. But up against you, Cam Newton, in some kind of a shooting contest, I would probably choke. I will admit it publicly. I would probably choke. I mean, you played in a Super Bowl. I only debate three guys who won Super Bowls. Michael Irvin won three. Richard Sherman won one, played in a couple. I forgot about the San Francisco, played in three. Two for Seattle. Keyshawn won one with the Bucks. But against you, I might fall apart. You're a far, far, far better athlete than I ever thought about being. But I'm game. Just let me know, and I'll be there. I'll give it a shot. First question is Carson from Brooklyn. The Cowboys win next year's Super Bowl, but LeBron wins another NBA title. Do you take that exchange? Carson. If you guaranteed me my Dallas Cowboys, and I've been a fan since I was 10 years of age, if you guaranteed me my Dallas Cowboys would win next year's Super Bowl on Fox in New Orleans, I would give you LeBron James winning three more championships, three more. That would be my trade. I would say, go, King, go. I would definitely make that exchange. I'd take one Lombardi for three more King rings. Three more. Heck, make it four. I don't care. You name it. I mean, Carson, understand, it has been 29 years since I even experienced an NFC championship game. And you understand that was at the end of the 1995 season. I wrote a book about that year called Hellbent. You realize that was the fourth of four straight NFC championship games those Cowboys had played in. We lived in the NFC championship game. In the first 30 years of the Super Bowl, we played in more than half the championship games. 16 out of 30, we were in it. Because we were America's team, were past tense. And now, somehow, we still lead the league in TV ratings, and we lead the world in value. We're the most valuable team in all of sports, and it's been 29 years since we even played in an NFC championship game. Stat I gave you last week, I will reiterate. Despite the pain it inflicts upon the depths of my soul, over the last 30 years, we're 5-13 in the postseason. 5-13. A of teams that have played at least 15 playoff games over that 30-year span, we have the worst winning percentage of all. We are the worst. We are bottom of the barrel at 5-13. My current quarterback is 2-5 in the postseason, having won 2 wild card round games in his career. 2-5, 2 wild card round games that he has won. LeBron, you can have 4 rings if I can have 1 Lombardi. Deal. If I have to make it with the devil, I'll make it with the devil. I'm sick and tired of watching my Dallas Cowboys upchuck. In a playoff game, I'm convinced they're about to win. But Carson, that is a great question, and I will bring that question back, I think, on Undisputed on live TV. It's a great one. Thank you. This is Wesley from St. Augustine, Florida. What position are the Cowboys weakest at? Okay, well, that's easy for me, Wesley. I just alluded to it. We are weakest at 1, quarterback, and 2, GM. Quarterback and GM. Those are the 2 problems with my Dallas Cowboys. Those are the 2 biggest reasons why my Cowboys just won 12 games in each of the last 3 seasons and crapped out in the playoffs. Now I have to listen to the latest nonsense from Jerry Jones, who will never fire himself as GM. The league meetings the other day, I had to listen to him talk about how we're world champions. And how it works, I'm quoting Jerry, when you don't have much money. What? World champions at how it works when you don't have much money? And I keep asking Keyshawn Johnson on Undisputed, maybe you've seen us go back and forth. He thinks I'm hard-headed, thick-headed. No. I'm smart and I'm right. We have had a mass exodus of players. And we still don't have any money. We've lost Tyron Smith, Tony Pollard, Tyler Biadasz, and the Wolf Hunter at linebacker, Michael Gallup, and Dorrance Armstrong, and Dante Fowler, and Neville Gallimore, and Hankins. It's a mass exodus. Out the door, out the door, out the door. And we don't have any money? Now comes word that Jerry and Dak have sort of mutually agreed to not do a deal ahead of next year, that he won't be extended so that we have new cap space, because Jerry finally saw the light and he's not going to throw more good money after bad to Dak Prescott. Well, that was a revelation for me. But what do you mean we don't have any money? The cap went up an unheard of, a shocking $30 million. And we don't have any money because we're going to pay CD and Micah and presumably Dak at some point? Pay CD, I told you last week, he's the man. He's got the goods. What did his mom say? What did she tweet after the playoff loss to Green Bay? That annihilation, disaster, debacle, embarrassment. What did she tweet? Dak ain't it. He's not. It's 3 straight years, 3 straight Dak flameouts in playoff games. We're the Dallas freaking Cowboys. We deserve better. I know what Don Meredith looked like. I know what Roger Staubach looked like. Heck, I know what Danny White looked like, and I definitely know what Troy Aikman looked like playing quarterback for the Cowboys, and Dak ain't it. He can be very good in regular seasons, although even this past season, was he very good at San Francisco, 42-10? Was he very good at Arizona? Was he very good at Buffalo? No, no, and a big no. And then here came the playoff game. Biggest embarrassment in my sports watching life was that playoff game. And we're going to extend him? We're going to keep Mike McCarthy and extend Dak Prescott? It's lunacy. We don't have any money to spend. Is it because our cap is the smallest in pro football? I thought they were all equal. All for one, one for all, right? Are we going to be the only team to field a squad of four players because that's all we can afford? I don't know. That's how Jerry speaks. We're all in. He did a big interview the other day at the league meetings. He used it a dozen times in his answers. All in. All in on what? On keeping CD? Well, that's just business as usual. Micah Parsons doesn't show up in big games, but I'll pay him. I'll plunge on it. I'll close my eyes and hope he grows up and figures it out. Jerry keeps talking about how we're hanging around the rim. I don't think Jerry's ever watched a basketball game in his life, and he keeps using this bizarre basketball analogy. We're hanging around the rim? Well, just dunk the damn ball, right? Just dunk it. Pretty easy. Jerry concluded the other day, he can learn from his mistake that he made on Zeke. Zeke had three sensational years, led the league in yards per game for three straight years, dominated his rookie year. And Jerry finally paid him the most money of any running back in all of pro football. And how did he repay Jerry? By running into the wall he used to run through. That was really the beginning of the end of Zeke, is when he got his money. So Jerry said some new face wouldn't have the experience to learn from that mistake, meaning why would I hire a young GM to come in here with no real experience when I know what it feels like to make a mistake and I'm learning from my mistakes? And Jerry said, as long as I do my homework and I have my energy, ... meaning he's still going to be the GM of the Dallas Cowboys, the owner and the operator of the Dallas Cowboys. So our weakest position by far is general manager. This is Howard from California. What actor is the GOAT and who is your favorite? Wow. So day after day, show after show, we arm wrestle on Undisputed over GOATs, sports GOATs, Brady, Jordan, Bonds, Gretzky, sports GOATs. This question from Howard just knocked me right out of my chair, because I'd never thought about who's the actor GOAT. And I am a movie lover, if you know me. So this is obviously dangerously subjective and personal. And for now, I'll stick with the male actors. Although Kate Blanchett just might be my leader in the clubhouse. So let me just bang through a few names. The usual suspects. Al Pacino. After The Godfather, to me, he became the greatest over-actor ever. By the way, Marlon Brando wasn't far off. De Niro can play a great De Niro. I'll give him that. Now I'll go way old school, because he deserves a mention here. Laurence Olivier, greatest Shakespearean actor ever. Not even close. Tom Hanks deserves a mention. Tom Hanks is the greatest at bringing little people to life on the big screen. Nobody better at that than Tom Hanks. Sidney Poitier, powerhouse of emotion. If you know In the Heat of the Night, Lilies of the Field, To Sir with Love, Powerhouse of Emotion. He's in my top five for sure. And a quick nod and mention to Matt Damon. I've always thought he was very underrated. People are prone not to like Matt Damon, and I'm not sure why, because he has a very underrated range. Recently did Air, brought to life the guy at Nike who just was just some guy who was advising them on their basketball spokespeople, and just a hustler, kind of a huckster. And Matt Damon had to play down to that character, and I thought he nailed it. My wife Ernestine and I really loved that movie, which we saw in a theater. Really, it was a tour de force by him. Jason Bourne characters. I could watch a Jason Bourne tonight and be entertained and enthralled, because Matt Damon, as small in real life as he is, filled that screen. Bagger Vance is one of my favorite movies. Was he not great in that? Rounders, one of my favorite movies. Was Matt Damon not great in that? Good Will Hunting, back to his original. Underrated. But that brings me to the top. My top two are Denzel and Jack. And I'll start with Denzel, because that character he brought to life in Training Day was simply the greatest portrayal of any character I've ever seen in any movie or film ever. He won the award for that, as he should have. Greatest portrayal ever. As riveting and captivating a portrayal as I've ever seen on the screen. And of course, Denzel as Malcolm X, and Fences, in all the Equalizer series. Special, rare, beyond gifted. Beautiful to watch. But I have to give a slight edge for GOAT to Jack Nicholson. To me, no one has ever taken over the screen with the range that Jack has, starting with another top five movie of mine, Chinatown, Jake Gittes, Private Investigator. And I still get chills when I talk to my wife, Ernestine, about The Shining. Jack just took it over. The range that he displayed, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Carnal Knowledge, another favorite of mine, Missouri Breaks, another favorite of mine, Five Easy Pieces, The Pledge, Wolf. I could go on and on and on, because Jack did. So Jack is my GOAT, but Denzel is my favorite. Now, if you will allow a quick aside, a quick left turn, I'm going to go from speaking about GOATs to a quick review of a movie just released that is far from GOATness as you can get. I'm talking about Roadhouse. I tried to get Ernestine to watch it with me. She said, not on your life. I'm out. I said, I got to check it out. She said, do it on the treadmill. I run for an hour on Saturday, run for an hour on Sunday. I usually watch golf or NBA. But this past weekend, I gave it up to Roadhouse. I watched the first hour on Saturday, and I gave it a flat-out F. It was insultingly pathetic, idiotically unwatchable, but I was a prisoner because I was on my treadmill, running to nowhere, stuck watching Roadhouse. But on Sunday, I watched the final 45-ish minutes. And I'll give that a B. So I will average my grade out at a C- for Roadhouse. But that first hour, it's not just your basic B movie. It's more like a C or probably a D movie. And I gave it an F. So here we had Jake Gyllenhaal. And by the way, early in Jake's career, I thought maybe he had the dramatic acting chops to ascend one day into the GOAT conversation. I really did early on, even like end of Watch. Thought he had that capacity. If you gave me a list of, say, 100 actors who played this character in Roadhouse, Jake Gyllenhaal would have been the last I would have picked on that list. But he did this movie, and he does play the reluctant badass, nice guy bouncer, troubled past, UFC fighter, went too far against a friend in the ring, lost it, accidentally killed him with one last fatal punch that he shouldn't have thrown. I don't know what's going on. I think the idea is he's protecting this Key West bar called the Roadhouse. It's under siege from bad guy henchmen. I think because this rich kid villain wants to shut down the Roadhouse because of, I don't know, it's always about drugs, something about drugs. I don't know. Don't ask me. I got lost. But I will give Roadhouse this. It escalated, if not took off, when Conor McGregor came flying onto screen about an hour in. This is Conor McGregor playing a really bad guy, a psycho on steroids. It's Conor McGregor on steroids, sort of figuratively, if not literally. I don't know. Could be. He's buffed up. So is Jake. Jake looks the part. He just can't act the part. But man, can Conor play psycho, because he's got a lot of that in him, as we know. So I did find the two big climactic fights between Jake and Conor to be interesting and extremely watchable. I will give you that. Of course, there are no two humans on this planet who could bash each other in the face the way these two do, again and again and again, with closed fists as hard as they can swing, connecting again and again and again, and just keep right on fighting and fighting and fighting. No humans could endure that kind of punishment. There is this thing called concussion. But they did, and I kept watching and watching and watching. And I will give you this. Jake versus Conor saved Roadhouse. It did. Really, Conor McGregor alone brought my grade up from F or F minus to C minus. Congratulations, Conor. Look forward to your next film.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is Jeremiah from St. Paul. If you had to follow one person on Twitter to keep your account, who would it be? Okay, so from the start of Twitter, I don't know, 2009, whatever it was, I didn't look it up. I chose to follow nobody. I always said back in the days, early days on First Take, well, I'm a leader, not a follower. I'd like to think that's the truth. I don't need other opinions to help me form mine. mine just naturally spring from my psyche, as warped as it might be, but they spring from my psyche, unfiltered and without any outside influence. But to your point, Jeremiah, if I had to keep my account, I would choose to follow my favorite NBA player, LeBron James. I must admit, when I do read about his tweets, I don't follow anybody, but when I read about his tweets, which is often because he's always making news with his tweets, they always amaze and often amuse me. So why not? I've said this from the start. LeBron James is the most interesting man in the history of sports. Every night, it is something with LeBron James. And when he's in one of his diva moods or his drama king mode that he goes into, he's liable to tweet just about anything, including F-bombs, as you know. It's just always something with the quote-unquote king. So I checked. He's got 53 million Twitter followers. He had 160 million IG followers, but 53 million on Twitter, or X as it's now called. So why not make it 53 million and one? You know, when I think about this, maybe I should just follow LeBron. So maybe, you know what? Maybe in the next couple of days, I'll do just that. This is Danny from Denver. Who is the best coach in the NFL right now? I've said from the start, if I could play for any coach in the NFL, Cam, if I could play for any coach, I'd play for Mike Tomlin, Mike T, Pittsburgh Steelers. 17 years he's coached the Steelers. That's a long time. Never had a losing season in 17. That's pretty great. But you know what? I'm going to throw this at you. And remember, I said this. As much as I would put Mike Tomlin at the top of my list right now, the newest threat to Mike T is now coaching out here in Los Angeles, coaching of all teams, the Chargers. The Chargers. Talking about Jim Harbaugh. I've said from the start, he's already proven to me he's the best coach in all of football, college and pro. You know what he did with the 49ers? 3 straight NFC championship games, 1 Super Bowl against his brother that came down to 1 very controversial Colin Kaepernick throw. Michael Crabtree, I thought interference should have been called. Nope, they quote-unquote let him play, and that was that. College football, everywhere Jim went, not good things, great things happened. National championship this past year at Michigan. He's the best coach overall, all around, college and pro. And now he's back in pro football. And the irony is, remember why Eli and his family did not want him to go to San Diego? It's because of the Spanos family that ran the Chargers, still runs the Chargers. So Archie Manning, the patriarch of the Manning clan, said, nope, no Spanos for you, Eli. We want you in New York. So they forced that trade of Eli for Phillip Rivers and several nice draft picks. No Eli in San Diego. Yet here comes Jim Harbaugh. Oh, I'll coach for the Spanos family. I got that. I'm going there because I like that quarterback. Watch Jim Harbaugh do great things back in pro football. This is Dean from Santa Barbara. I imagine you are someone who never loses their keys or remote. Am I right? So, Dean, I bounced this question off my wife, Ernestine, and I got to tell you, she laughed out loud. She laughed in my face and effectively in yours, Dean. She's She said she's lost track of how many times she has washed my keys in pockets of my pants in which I left them. Lost track of how many times that has happened. And then she laughed and said, at least two or three times a Friday or Saturday night when she and I are sitting on the couch watching our shows, I say, where's the remote? I can't find the remote. And she says, well, did you check in the crevice of the couch? Did it get stuck down in the crevice? Yeah, it's down there. Or is it under that blanket over there? Or is it under that cushion? Or where? I don't know. I lost the remote. Look, I am constantly to a fault thinking about Undisputed, thinking about sports and sports debates and sports arguments. Invariably, inevitably, on a Friday night, I'll be sitting, as I did last Friday night, we're watching the new Guy Ritchie, The Gentleman. It's very good, by the way. We're on episode 2 or 3, and I'm enjoying it, and all of a sudden, I'm lost in thought about, wait a second, when Keyshawn said that today on Undisputed, I should have just said that. I should have countered with that. I mean, what was I thinking? And I lose it, and I go off for a while, and I'm staring at the wall, and Ernestine says, are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. Well, you're not watching. Well, I'm back. I'm good. I'm okay. But where's the remote? I don't know what happened to the remote. Okay, so being as intensely focused as I constantly am makes me absent-minded, as I also constantly can be, Dean. And finally, this is from Charlie from Tennessee. I miss Vanderbilt. I miss Nashville. Charlie from Tennessee asks, what do you keep on your nightstand? How many glasses of water? Charlie, glasses of water? Seriously? Okay, so once upon a time, Shannon Sharp and I did a commercial. I'm losing track. 5 years ago, maybe, for Undisputed. It's me waking up in the morning, jumping out of bed with my workout clothes already on, like I slept in my workout clothes. It's like Shannon versus me, who can get to the studio first and better prepared. And you can see a little picture on my nightstand of Zeke. No more Zeke on my nightstand. What I do have on my nightstand are two things. I have a digital clock that I think I've had since high school. Do they have digital clocks when I was in high school? I've had it for a long time. And it serves only as my second alarm to my phone, just in case I forget to do my phone. This is one job you do not oversleep for, because the show must go on. So I always set a second alarm just in case. Weirdly, it always goes off before my first alarm, but that's just me being absent-minded. I also have a noise machine, especially to drown out the noise in the afternoon when I take about an hour and a half nap. If Hazel barks, our little Maltese, there's work around us, people, some kind of new home construction. I just need the sound machine right in my ear to tune out the world for my hour and a half nap. And that's it, Charlie. So, glasses of water? Me? So, Charlie, think about this. At night, I sleep 4, maybe 4.5 hours. Maybe. So I try to go to sleep by 9:30 or 10-ish and sleep until 2. And I'm always flying out of bed at 2 o'clock. So the last thing I want to do before I go to bed or while I'm in bed is to drink water. It's the last thing I want to do. I don't want my bladder to wake me up. It's the last thing in the world I want. I want my alarm to wake me up at 2. I don't want my bladder to wake me up at 1:30. So I dehydrate before bedtime. I concentrate on not drinking anything from about 6 o'clock on. I eat dinner sometime around 6-ish, and whatever I have with dinner, I don't want to drink anymore because I don't want to wake up. So, Charlie, shockingly, I have 0 glasses of water ever on my nightstand because the last thing I want to do is go to the bathroom before 2 o'clock in the morning and then have to try to go back to sleep for 45 minutes. Now, I do drink, when I wake up, I drink a lot, water, whatever I'm drinking, because I'm about to get on the treadmill for an hour. So I hydrate before I get on the treadmill. But Charlie, never, ever at night. That is it for episode 106. Thank you for listening and or watching. Thanks to Jonathan Berger and his All-Pro team for making this show go. Thanks to Tyler Korn for producing. Please remember, Undisputed every weekday, 9:30 to noon Eastern. The Skip Bayless Show, every week.